Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Will we just do this? You call me later then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall behind the gentleman standing there. If you want to read that for us, please. Attendance by observation. Juergens, Dorn, Bauman, Adams, Lytle, Setzer.
I don't know if you've got mine or what.
And we are going to skip the consent agenda for the time being and go to a 9:15 timed event. It is now 9:16. So it's a public hearing to hear support and opposition from the public on a special use permit number 2012-2 to convert a single family home into a bed and breakfast, location 42634 South 23rd Road, Wymore, Nebraska, Section 31, Blue Springs, Wymore Township. So we need to hear the recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission on special use permit 2012-2 to convert a single family home into a bed and breakfast. You're the lucky one today, huh? Name and address for the record.
Jeff Furix, 1410 Paddock Lane, Beatrice, Nebraska.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
I do have a handout. I've got seven copies that I'm going to let you guys pass around.
Okay.
Just a reference to our zoning regs. So, obviously, this is related to the request for the bed and breakfast. We did make a recommendation, obviously, Rex, to unanimously deny it. And just a little background on why. There were 57 letters sent out for the public hearing. I think we had roughly seven people attend in opposition, as well as one letter that was opposing. And then the two applicants were obviously for the special use permit. So that was kind of what we had at the hearing. When we looked at this, we struggled a bit. Obviously, if this were a new feedlot coming in next to a residence, they would be required to have a setback of 3/8 of a mile. Our regs do not have anything in place as it relates to a residence coming into a feedlot. So we dug a little further, and if you look at, I believe, the second page of that handout, our recommendation was basically based on what I've got kind of highlighted in a star by there, that providing the use permit would comply with the following guidelines. And, you know, we struggled with not being detrimental to the adjacent property, which would be the existing feedlot, obviously, that we'll hear about or hear from, and not tend to depreciate the value of the surrounding structures and property. So that was kind of the basis for our denial, referring to the special use permit request. Other things that probably relate to the regs that maybe is worth pointing out, the existing feedlot is considered to be a facility B. So if you look at the last page of that handout, that's 501 to 1,000 animal units, and they fall, Hardens fall within that guideline. Basically, Lisa went out, measured their existing permanent structured lots, and they can have up to 1,000 animal units, and an animal unit is considered to be one 750-pound animal. They're running cow-calf, so the regs change a little bit. There's a chart that if you want to refer to that, and that may not be in there, but UNL has guidelines basically saying you need roughly 400 square foot per cow-calf pair. Their lot is roughly just short of 400,000 square foot. So they could have 900-plus animal cow-calf pairs in that lot that they have existing. So if that comes into play, that's a little information there.
Okay, question. If they chose to expand in Ag 1 up to the 10,000 animal unit and all other setbacks are met, they have the land capacity to do that, correct?
I believe they do have the land capacity to do that, yeah. Obviously, at that point, if they expanded, it would be a special use permit to expand.
Correct.
You know, as the setbacks are
The point I'm trying to make, they're in Ag 1, so yes. If their expansion would come first.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Any other questions for Jeff? Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, it is now 9:21. I need a motion to go into a public hearing. And motion to public hearing to hear the P&Z's recommendation. There's a sign-up sheet, a clipboard right there. If you care to speak, it's what happened to you? Hope it's not your road. It's a clipboard there with a sign-up sheet. If you would care to talk, please sign in, and we'll go off the sheet there. And so need a motion to open the public hearing.
So moved.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve opening the public hearing. I think they're... We'll give a minute to get that signed. Mary, you're the first one to sign.
No, I had a better
understanding. Oh, he's the first one. Bob, welcome to the hot seat. Bob, up to the podium, please. Name and address for the record.
Get my cheaters on, Rex. I'm getting older.
I got to have them all the time.
I am Robert Harden, 36107 South 36th Road of Blue Springs. I hope you've all had a little chance to review what I've put together for you all today. And to start with, I would like to read my letter, which you all have a copy of. I am the tenant of the property surrounding the 1.6 acres belonging to Michael Colgrove. I've been the tenant of this property since 1975, which the purpose of raising livestock as well as crop production. The farm consists of 156 acres belonging to John Coffey Trust. I have been on this property year-round for the purpose of the pasture, the stock fields, and use of the feed yard. I own approximately 150 cows. I use this facility also for calving. My concerns about the zoning changes are as follows. Occupants of a bed and breakfast may have complaints such as noise and smell and dust and other factors associated with raising cattle. Also concerns would be of crops. You also involve the same noise and dust and odors such as chemicals and fertilizer application. As you all know, farming and raising the cattle, these issues could occur at any time, day or night. I was previously involved in a lawsuit with the same problems back in 1983. According to Article 6.4 of the Gage County Zoning Regulations, any new livestock confinement facility operation cannot be established within 3/8 of a mile to the nearest wall of a residence. My question would be, to allow a bed and breakfast to establish within this range of a cattle existing operation, why would there be a change in allowing a bed and breakfast to exist? Other issues I would have would be also residents or occupants coming to the bed and breakfast. If any dogs or anything of that sort would get loose, come over to the cattle, owners would come after their dogs to retrieve them. You run a lot of liability problems, I believe. People could get hurt, dogs could get hurt, but not only just with the livestock, out into the fields as well. If they'd enter a field, they'd been maybe sprayed with chemical, you run a liability risk. Also, in the past, I believe, 2011, Gage County opened the livestock-friendly county. And I feel that in changing the zoning, this may go against what that was really designated to work for. I'm not opposed to a bed and breakfast in Gage County, but I feel there are better locations more suitable. I also feel that Article 5 of the zoning district, 511, may have also been one to have considered. Article 6, 6.2 procedures, which you've already discussed, was number 3 and 4, was used. I feel that this is, the Planning and Zoning Board made the appropriate recommendations, and I would also hope that the Board of Supervisors would also follow in suit. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Bob. Any questions for Bob?
Bob, how long have you had cattle there?
Probably 30 years.
30 plus years?
Yeah. Ever since I started farming the farm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my memory, there's always been cattle there.
Yeah. My father-in-law, John Coffey, had cattle there before I started farming it, so.
Just a clarification, this isn't a zoning change. The zoning regs, it's a special use permit.
Did it start as a zoning request change, though, to go from an Ag 1 to an Ag 2 or anything, or just a special use permit?
It's allowable use in Ag 1.
I just want, so everybody understands, we're not changing, you know, we are an ag-friendly county, and that goes to our zoning regs and stuff. This basically, the zoning regs say it's a permitted use if X, Y, and Z is met. So I just want, so you understand, it's still ag is number one right there, Ag 1.
But it was my understanding they would ask for a zoning change of the 1.6 acre property.
No, it's not listed on here.
It may have started that way, but what's before the board here is just whether the special use permit should be granted.
You're Ag 1 regardless.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's not going to change.
Yeah, there's no request for that except to have a permit to have a bed and breakfast.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mary, you're up. Same spiel. Name and address for the record, please.
Mary Coffey, 506 North 12th Street, Wymore, Nebraska. I'm just going to read the letter that I had prepared, which is included in your packets for the record. I am the trustee of the farm located adjacent to the Michael Colgrove property. My dad purchased the farm in 1959 and sold 1.63 acres, which included the house, to Bob Flansburg in 1968 for $2,000. Our family has raised cattle on this land since my father purchased the farm. I am concerned as a landowner with liability issues, and if an occupant of the B&B would venture onto my land to see the cattle, baby calves, or farm machinery. The child or guest could be seriously injuring, opening the trust up to a potential lawsuit. Article 6.4 of the Gage County Zoning Regulations states that a livestock feeding operation cannot be established within 3/8 of a mile of an existing residence. If the trust decided to sell this property in the future, it could potentially reduce the value of our land if a new owner would be unable to raise cattle or use the existing facilities. Article 5 of the Gage County Zoning Regulations states that the intent of this district is designated for general agricultural use and is intended to preserve and protect agricultural production from encroachment of incompatible uses. If approved, I believe having a B&B would go against Article 5. I feel that the proposed B&B does not comply with 4 of the criteria established in Article 6.4 of the Gage County Special Use Permit Zoning Regulations. Number 1, be compatible with and similar to use permitted in the district. 3, not be detrimental to the adjacent property. 4, not tend to depreciate the value of the surrounding structures or property. And 5, be compatible with the stated intended use of the district. We have also submitted in your packet to the board letters of opposition to the proposed zoning change from Yvonne Pettit, Larry and Rachel Lottman, Dennis Curtis, Rod Goes, and Lauren Traunick. Therefore, I respectfully request denying the proposed zoning change.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Hold on. There might be questions for you. Any questions for Mary? And there is no zoning change. I mean, that may have been how it started, but there's no request for changing anything out of Ag 1. So, no questions? Thank you. Mike Colgrove.
Good morning. My name is Mike Colgrove. I am the applicant at this. I live at 42634 South 23rd Road in Wymore. I also split my time with a residence in New York City. First, let me thank the board for being able to present this application for a special use permit. And I do want to follow up with a clarification. It never started out as a zoning change request. It was always just a special use permit application. I would also actually like to introduce my mom, Sharon Colgrove, who's in the audience. I'm going to be referencing her a little bit during this testimony. The application that I'm assuming you all received, right, that the clerk took care of that, seeks a special use permit to operate the existing residential property at 42634 South 23rd Road in Wymore as a bed and breakfast. The existing residential property is a two-story, four-bedroom, one-bath, single-family home, and a conversion into a bed and breakfast would transform it into a five-bedroom, three-bath home. The property, as Ms. Coffey indicated, has been in my family, my grandparents, Robert and Evelyn Flansburg, purchased it from John Coffey in 1968. They made a number of additions and improvements to the house, and then after my grandmother passed away a couple of years ago, she willed the house to her estate and her four children, my mom, my two aunts and uncle. I then purchased the home from them in September of last year, 2011. And I originally purchased it from them essentially as a home for my mother, a place for the family to continue to get together, and possibly a retirement home for myself, should the market never really recover. After extensive exploration and discussions with my mom, we actually decided then to pursue the option of operating it as a bed and breakfast. My mother would handle the day-to-day operations. She would move back down to Wymore from Council Bluffs, where she currently resides. She'd handle the day-to-day operations, and I and my partner would manage the online reservations and finances from New York. We conservatively estimate right now that the costs of converting the home into a bed and breakfast, which would fully comply with the local and state codes and regulations, including those of the fire marshal, who we've already been in discussions with, and the Department of Environmental Quality, who we've also been in discussions with, as well as conforming with the standards of the Nebraska Association of Bed and Breakfast, would be on the order of about $100,000. When you add the costs of the needed landscaping to the site, fortifying and privatizing the perimeter, additional renovations and remodeling that are required, all the furnishings, the services that go with it, the amenities, and the initial marketing and promotions, we would estimate that startup costs would be on the order of $200,000 over the next 3 to 5 years. I've been working with the Beatrice Chamber of Commerce, and specifically Jim Spangler, the Gage County Tourism Director. Mr. Spangler discussed our hope to start a bed and breakfast with the Advisory Committee of the Convention Visitors Bureau, who expressed their support of a new bed and breakfast, especially in light of a recent closure of a bed and breakfast in Adams and the potential sale of another one just outside of Beatrice. We are planning on targeting very specific types of guests for the B&B. Our primary guests, which would be spring, summer, and early fall, would be friends and families of locals, of people in the county and in the southeast region of Nebraska. People who would be looking for a place to stay while visiting the area for summer events, reunions, high school graduations, holidays, and unfortunately even funerals. We would also hope to run a couple of marketing campaigns in Lincoln, Omaha, and Kansas City to attract people to come spend a weekend in the country. And lastly, we do anticipate, as you heard earlier, to attract hunters to some level to help support us over the fall and winter. And we think there is a good audience there as well. Our initial projections indicate that we might be able to achieve first-year occupancy of about 13.5%. That would be about 200 people in the first year. That could increase gradually through year four, where we may get something on the order of 43%. That would be about 800 unique guests brought into the area. Just by way of comparison, the statewide average occupancy rate is 54%. Whether we get to 43.5% is certainly questionable. They're projections, and they're just a way of us seeing sort of worst and best case scenarios. But that would be on the order of 200 to 800 people per year, who would be here shopping, using the restaurants, visiting the local tourism attractions, the fairs, the sites, and customing local businesses. We do believe that we will bring in terms of revenue, somewhere on the order of $36,000 in year one to maybe $70,000 in year four, almost all of which will be used simply to cover annual expenses. We don't expect to make much of a profit on this bed and breakfast. It is only going to be a four-room bed and breakfast, and as such is relatively on the small side. We are simply hoping to cover our annual expenses and to offset the costs of homeownership. I certainly am not expecting to become a millionaire from this bed and breakfast. I do want to mention that I fully understand that the primary purpose of an AG1 zone is for general agriculture use, and I would not even be pursuing this special use permit if I felt that a bed and breakfast in any way encroached on that primary use of the area. I believe, in fact, that the fact that the zoning plan specifically makes reference to a bed and breakfast as an accepted or an acceptable permitted special use supports my conclusion that agriculture and bed and breakfast and tourism are fully compatible with one another. In fact, the very nature and location of the district is one of the attractions we hope to use to draw people into the region. A bed and breakfast is by definition simply an extension of a residential property. It is not a standalone business, and by its very nature is not significantly different from a residential home which already exists on the property in question. And so my conclusion from that is converting this or approving a special use permit for a bed and breakfast does not in any way fundamentally change the nature or the questions of any of the issues raised so far. There's already a residential property there. All the issues are the same issues that they would be if the bed and breakfast were approved. excuse me. I just wanted to address some of the issues of why the Planning and Zoning Board, what we heard previously. The issue of not being detrimental to adjacent property. There are many concerns raised, and we heard them again this morning, about the potential of hunters or guests possibly being a liability to our neighbors. That at the planning and zoning hearing, there were questions raised about hunters possibly shooting their cattle or dogs getting loose and harming the cattle. I do sort of want to reinforce that guests of bed and breakfast tend to be of a more affluent nature. That's a relatively accepted standard across the country with bed and breakfast owners. We certainly do not anticipate that the types of hunters who might be staying with us in the fall and winter would be the type who would, for recreational purposes, go out and harm cattle. And it's much more likely that they will be serious hunters who have invested considerable money in their dogs, in their equipment, in the permits, and would not jeopardize their situation by either harming cattle or certainly letting their dogs run free, where it's much more likely that the dog would be injured. And that, like I said, is a significant investment for the hunters. That said, we do take the concerns of our neighbors very seriously, and we have every intention of making every effort to secure the property line. We want to take down the existing fencing, put up more secure private fencing around the area, provide secure housing for the dogs if it turns out that that's needed, if the hunters do need that, and certainly ensure that all of our guests, hunters and others, are fully aware of the nature of the property next door and that it is completely off limits, and to continuously reinforce that before and during their stay with us. I can't really address the issue of depreciating the value of the surrounding structure or property. I have tried to look for comparable situations where there may be a feedlot of any nature next to some sort of hotel, motel, or bed and breakfast in the region, and I can't find any. It certainly seems to me, however, that if the property next door were sold, whether this was a bed and breakfast or simply the residence that it is, would have little impact on the property of the value of the property during the sale itself. Meaning that if this special use permit for a bed and breakfast were approved, I can't imagine there would be an incremental detriment to the property of the value over what already exists having a feedlot so close to a residential property. There were a number of other considerations made, which I think I've tried to address as significantly as I can. I just want to sort of close by saying that really all we're trying to do here is establish a residence where my mother can come down, make a living. She can be closer in proximity to her grandchildren who live down in Missouri. We want a place where the family can stay, and we'd like to be able to make a little bit of revenue off that to help support the continued investment in the home and improving it and having it be in our family for as long as it can. So, again, I thank you for your time and appreciate any questions that you may have.
The question, I have a couple. They have 150 cow-calf operation there now. That's somewhere probably 125 calves that they wean right there. You know how loud that is?
I do, actually. I've heard them bringing the cattle in and out. And I don't know, Mr. Hardin didn't mention if the existing number of cattle they have is the number of cattle they've had throughout the entire existence of the feedlot. But I do know, talking with my mom, my family, and my own memories, that as long as that cattle feedlot has been there, the summers I've spent down here, all the times I've been here, the dust, the flies, the noise, none of that has ever been an issue over the last 20 years. And I certainly have never had my grandmother complain about it. In fact, the lawsuit that Mr. Hardin mentioned was with the pig feedlot that they used to run on the property. They actually ran it not particularly well. And the judge sided with my grandparents that it was a nuisance, gave them opportunities to improve it, and they didn't. They have since, from my perspective anyway, and I have to admit, I was very, very young when all that happened. But from my perspective, they're excellent neighbors with that cattle feedlot. It seems like it's run very well. And actually, I go back to my point earlier where I think the nature of this whole zone and this whole district is something that might be of interest to people. If people complain about staying at a bed and breakfast next door to a cattle feedlot if they determine it's too loud or whatever, I think those are issues that we can handle in our refund policy and our guest policies and things like that. But I've always been very intrigued by the lot next door, and I think it's part of the nature of the area, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, I'm just trying to make a very clear while we're on public record that they can go up to 1,000 cattle in there.
I do understand that.
And there is smells associated. There is nuisances. You guys raise cattle. There's nuisances involved with making a living with cattle.
Right.
And just so everyone understands, I was on P&Z when we started. I was on the county board when P&Z come in. The reason there is no agricultural setback differences of the 3/8 of a mile versus a house is if you're knowingly going to put in next to a hog confinement unit or whatever, you're doing that with the ag is always number one. And the ag, you are a special use permit going into an area that is permitted by design. Your special use permit that can be pulled, the special use permit is granted and it can be taken away. Ag 1 is always there up to 1,000 animal unit.
Correct.
So that's why there is no restrictions of moving in next to a confinement, my understanding. And because you know it going into it up front, and if you choose to move next to it, that's your decision. But I want that out on public record, and if anyone has any questions, now is the time to ask.
No, I got a question for that, Rex. The special use permit could be taken away at some future time?
His could be, yes, by the motion of this board. So,
and again, there would have to be some substance to that. You can't
correct.
Just
okay.
Carte blanche because...
Correct. There's got to be valid reasons for it. But it can be granted, and that's why it's a special use.
Something with the special use permit that changes it.
But there's a special use permit could be worded that, you know, however people like this word then.
Lengthy,
yeah.
Just out of curiosity, sort of before I admit to agreeing to that on public record, I do fully understand that the special use permit takes those into consideration. But my understanding was the reason the cattle feedlot was built within 3/8 of a mile to begin with from an existing residential structure was that the zoning requirements were in place at the time.
True. He
is that correct?
He is grandfathered.
So he's grandfathered into that.
He's grandfathered in.
Okay. That's, I just wanted to make sure that was the reason for that. Right. So the only, so the special use permit to operate as a bed and breakfast is what I'm sort of walking into eyes wide open.
Yes.
The fact that there's a residence there can't
change. That's exactly the right word.
You, right.
You're
okay.
Knowingly knowing that they take first and foremost
right.
Their livelihood, of their existence, of their past.
Right.
You're entering into that. Matt.
That's true. I have a question regarding the improvements you'd like to make on the property. Those would be made prior to the property being converted to a bed and breakfast, correct?
Well, the original intention was that if the county does approve the special use permit, we would start corporation filings and actually set up as a bed and breakfast. And then the renovations would be made. This is still where I'm a little fuzzy on it with our lawyer. But, yeah, the reason I'm hesitant is because we could possibly use a small business loan if this is done as a bed and breakfast to make the renovations on the home. If it's not used or another, if the permit is not granted, we still have renovations to make. We may have to take more equity out in the home to make that, although that's still another option even if we do go with the bed and breakfast.
I see the improvements on the property here, and as we just got out of equalization, at the risk of being coy, there's some tax benefits to having you make these improvements. Outside of it being a bed and breakfast, I think it improves the property. It makes, if nothing else, a nice acreage to sell or live at.
Sure.
And I'm not here to ask you what you do for a living, but the question that I keep going over in my mind is there's not a lot of local support for that. And so should a potential new business come in and potentially detrimentally affect an existing business? So if an economic
you may have another bed and breakfast coming?
There's an existing agricultural business in place.
Oh.
There's not a lot of local support, and there's a potential that it could adversely affect that existing business. So from an economic development standpoint, we in Gage County want to be supportive of new business, or at least I won't speak for the board, I do. We've
sure.
designated ourselves as being livestock friendly. Here's an existing business that is agriculture, and there's a potential new business that may, and I think there's some valid concerns, may adversely affect an existing business. Those are my concerns. There's an opportunity to go ahead and improve the property, which I think would be wonderful, would add to the landscape, but that's kind of where I'm standing now. There's a new business that may, because we don't know for sure, may adversely affect an existing business.
Right. No, thank you. I appreciate that.
Any other questions for Mr. Colbert?
What, Myron? What you and Hardin have both brought up about the possibility of, like, it probably never will happen, but the hunting, you know, the issues with dogs. But I guess I'm more of a comment than what kind of liability type insurance type you as a bed and breakfast owner have for your guest, and will they also have in case a guest happens to wonder? I mean, those are things that I see out in the future that you hope never happens, but what if something does? And I guess bring that up as much as a question as a comment.
Yeah. No, and I appreciate that too. And we have been in discussions with the Wymore Insurance Agency, who has our residential property insurance on the home, and they have looked into bed and breakfast insurance and what that would entail. We've discussed it with our lawyers about the levels of insurance that we would need and what it would cover. And I think actually it's a relatively standard, while this specific situation of having a feedlot next door to a bed and breakfast may be somewhat unique, there are always the situations where you have adjoining properties next to bed and breakfasts. And so there's always this risk of guests vandalizing or damaging properties. And my guess is that this probably happens every time there's a request for a bed and breakfast in a community. This same conversation happens. And it's my understanding that the insurance recognizes that and that that's part of what the coverage includes.
Thanks.
Gary.
Mike, this isn't a real big issue, but I'm actually part of the visitors committee.
Oh.
I wasn't present the day that you were there for your, or had talked to Jim or whatever.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm a little bit, it's not a real big issue, but I'm a little bit concerned. You said that Jim promotes your project. My conversations with Jim, it's Jim is behind a bed and breakfast. I don't believe that he's actually in support of your project, or
you're
he hasn't come out
right.
and said that.
You're right, I did not mean to clarify. And his email to me specifically said, while the CVB cannot get behind any specific project, they are generally in support of additional bed and breakfasts in the area. And I do apologize if I didn't state it that way.
Any other questions?
Kathy? I guess I just have one comment more than a question, is that just coming off of equalization in the last 2 years, we've had people that have built homes next to feedlots or hog lots or whatever, and then come in and said, we need our valuation lowered because I'm sitting next to a feedlot and it smells and we have dirt. And, you know, I think this looks like a great project, but I'm not sure it's a great location.
Yeah, that was certainly a concern of the planning and zoning here board as well. But I can't, unfortunately,
that's
where my family home. That's where my family home is located. I can't pick it up and move it.
Any other questions?
How did you come up with the idea of a bed and breakfast other than maybe a little bit of financial gain? I mean, you said so your mother could do something, but why at that location a bed and breakfast?
It's a purely opportunistic situation. I have a possession of the family home at that location, and it's actually a great home for something like this. And I really do go back to feeling like the issues with the feedlot next door can be mitigated to the point where there will be guests that come and actually enjoy staying there and enjoy being in the area.
Just one last thing. Are there opportunities to develop this property and maybe have conversations with the neighbors and develop a relationship outside of a bed and breakfast, do it as an existing property, and maybe get some of that buy-in to alleviate some of those concerns? Is that an opportunity, or would that financial outlay with no definite return not be feasible? I could see a situation where you could complete it and say, this is a residence, nothing's changed, what do you think? And I think there's some concerns there, but there's maybe an opportunity to improve some comfort level.
Yeah.
But I don't even know if that's an opportunity. Maybe it's more of a comment than a question.
And I certainly would welcome it. I have tried to I reached out to Mr. Hardin at the end of the planning and zoning hearing to possibly sit down and discuss some of these concerns, and that offer is always on the table. I would have to say that a lot of the renovation work that is currently planned is due to meeting the fire marshal's requirements specifically for a bed and breakfast that has more than two rooms. So things like I would possibly have to install sprinklers in the upstairs bedrooms because there's no egress right now. Except for the window, and there's still conversations with the fire marshal, but it certainly is the cost of the renovations that would be needed to convert it to a bed and breakfast, particularly adding the two bathrooms, which would be a requirement for the Nebraska Association of Bed and Breakfast Standards. Those are things that I don't know that I would necessarily pursue right now if we weren't going to start opening as a bed and breakfast in the next year or two.
Any other questions for Mr. Colgrove? Thank you.
Thank you.
Bob, do you have anything after you've heard what you've heard? Okay.
Mr. Rex, may I make a quick comment?
Sure.
As it relates to the regs, Article 6 does refer to special use permit facilities. It is not referring to zoning reg change requests. You know, what you have in hand is referring to the special use permit, which I think you guys realize.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Any more discussion?
I've got one more question. In the special use permit here, and this is probably more for Roger, it says that when it's brought before us, then we need to have a favorable vote of 2/3 or 5 members.
I'm looking at Amanda. She handles
that's
correct. Oh, Amanda. Okay, that's right. Just so I know ahead of time before we vote. So 2/3 today here is 4.
That would be correct.
Because 5 is 5 out of the 6.
Forgive my math skills.
Yeah. Okay. No, I read that in here when we had our packet, and that's just I wanted to make sure I understood that also, that
if we ended up 3-3, it would be denied.
It wouldn't pass.
It wouldn't pass, yes. Okay.
Okay, Roger, this question is for you. If the special use permit is granted, can it be worded to protect the future livestock? It's yes or no. Okay, so that is...
Again, the conditions and stuff, you basically reinforce if he would change his use after granted. Yeah, and again, not to say anything, but it may be very easy if he started having guests doing something not permitted by law, then the use can be terminated, and that can take place very quickly. Say he wanted to expand or something like that, again, that use is going to be expanded. Okay, now if Mr. Harden wants to expand his cow-calf operation, he can do so by right up to the limits under our zoning laws. But again, and somebody may question, can he, if he sells his property, does that special use permit transfer? That's going to have to come back before the board, go through the P&Z, because that's going to be a different owner that does that.
Can conditions be set on the special use? Because I know we've done them before.
Not since we've been here.
I know they've
again,
been.
Well, no, and again, you have to comply with the regulations. This is a by right. If it's granted, fine. If he would do something to change,
okay.
Then the P&Z administrator can bring that to, first of all, our attention, and then we will bring it back before the board. We'll probably send a letter to the person holding the special use permit and say, is our opinion you violated your special use permit in these regards? And if there are things that can be corrected quickly, fine. If they're not, and again, because they'll have a vested right at that point. He's talking about spending quite a bit of money here. And again, if it can be corrected and done so, so be it. If he can't, then it can be withdrawn.
Okay.
But as far as conditions, I mean, basically you can't add to your zoning regs. And that's why, you know, the state has gone through our zoning book and says it complies with the things that make this an ag-friendly county. And one of those things are that we can't basically, you know, this board may set a condition, next year somebody else may come on, and, you know, they don't like that. And that's why you don't have these conditions trying to perpetuate them in the future.
Does any other board members have a question? Bob, Mike, any other, after hearing discussion, any other questions? Okay. Need a motion to close the public hearing at 9:58.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Lytle, seconded by Bauman. Discussion.
Vote.
6-0 in favor of closing the public hearing. Need a motion to approve or disapprove resolution on special use permit number 2012-2 to convert a single family home into a bed and breakfast. Location 426 34 South 23rd Road, Wymore, Nebraska, Section 31, Blue Springs, Wymore Township. 12-20.
I make a motion to disapprove the special use permit 2012-2.
Second.
Moved by Bauman, seconded by Lytle to disapprove the special use permit 12-20. Discussion. Gary.
Just want to make comment that I think it is a neat opportunity. I think it would be a good idea. But I think I just keep coming back to, excuse me, the compatible with the stated intended use of the district and also similar to the use permitted in the district. And I really struggle with that. And we have P&Z in place to kind of sort through these things. And when they give us a recommendation, that's something that I really, really take to heart. And being P&Z felt so strongly against this, I think that that's probably a good consideration we got to take. However, I do disagree on some or have some issues with just normal liability issues that farmers take. I agree with Bob. I mean, it is issues, but like Mike said, these dogs that are would come in, you know, they're not going to be running willy-nilly, them are just everyday normal liabilities that we have as farmers, and I don't see that as being a big issue, but I really struggle with the intended use of the area.
Any more discussion? Terry.
I agree. I mean, probably unprecedented if we would go against the planning zoning. That's what they're in place for, to sort through most of these things. So I myself personally would follow their recommendation.
Okay. Any more discussion? Vote. 6-0 to disapprove 1220 special use permit. Thank you. Okay, does anyone need a recess or keep plugging?
Yes, please.
Okay,
yes.
Let's take a 5-minute recess.
Okay,
it is 10:11. We're going to reconvene the Gage County Board of Supervisors. Attendance by observation: Juergens, Dorn, Bauman, Adams, Lytle, Setzer. We're going to go to the very start. The consent agenda, which is the general agenda. Approve minutes of meeting held July 11th, 2012. Approve all claims through July 25th, 2012 in the amount of $684,148.76. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve permit number 915 for Robert Schuster to bore electric line under County Road in northeast quarter section, Township 2, North Range 5 East, Elm Township, Sicily Township. Approved permit 916 for John Shallow to place water drainage line under County Road in southwest section of Paddock Township. Approved permit number 917 for Terry Acton to bore water electric line under County Road, southeast quarter section, southwest quarter section, in Blue Springs, Wymore Township.
I would make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Moved by Bauman.
Right.
Seconded by Juergens. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve. Regular agenda. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Discussion of tire amnesty grant. Linda, you're up.
You bet. Paul Hay apologizes. He had to go back to the county fair, and he couldn't miss any more. So I'm filling in for him. I wasn't planning on doing this, but we'll do fine. And my name is Linda Grell, and Paul Hay and I, we write the grant for the city, for the county, for the tire amnesty to the Department of Environmental Quality, the tire program. And this year we were awarded 185 ton, and since we are not, you are the recipient of the grant, Gage County is, I would like to have you, Rex, maybe could you read this flyer I sent out, and so it is actually coming from the county instead of coming from Paul and I. The only correction, addition that Paul and I are, Paul has said, is that it says a limit of 4 tons, and we are going to make an exception for the villages, Barnston, Adams, Blue Springs. In the past, they have done collections trying to clean up their communities, and they go around and pick up the tires, and they may have more than 4 tons. So it won't be from one certain person. It would be from a village or a town.
Okay, I question here, are you going to bill them or are you going to collect it at the time?
Paul didn't address that as he left. I think it should be collected at the time, personally. We did call the Butler County Landfill. That's who got the low bid at David City, and they said the checks can be made out to them, to the Butler County Landfill. So we only are accepting.
Who's responsible if they do not pay?
That's a good question. That's why I personally feel that they should, you can estimate how many you have, and if it's over 4 ton, I'd suggest they bring a check and or be weighed. But that's your call. It's your grant. Just an explanation, we've always in the past, all the other years, we've had a much larger grant, and DEQ gave out many, many grants, but at a reduced cost, a reduced amount to all of them. So we work with what we have.
Well, I'm in favor of it. I do not like the billing. I don't think the county will be responsible. They need to be collected at the time. Otherwise, you know, they choose not to pay. We could be up to...
Yes. And that,
how high do you want to go?
That has happened in some communities. The gal that's in charge of this program, Ruth Johnson, has called me several times just to alert everybody of that situation. There is, in the past, there's always been a slush fund or an extra fund at DEQ. There is no, absolutely zero amount this year. So what we have is what we have. The other question would be, hopefully David City has said they'll be there that day or the next day picking up. We have not worked with David City before. We worked with Champlin before. And if it rains, there is a possibility that the tires could get water in them, and that increases the weight. So we do need to keep some under the tonnage. Just hopefully it does rain, but when a tractor tire fills up with water, it increases the weight a great deal. As I shared with you earlier, we do keep a running total, and it is only Gage County residents that can come in, and no other county is allowed. A lot of the counties around us have had smaller ones, Jefferson and a lot of other small counties, or not small counties, small grants. We are one of the largest grants in the state. I think they were one of the top three, not the largest, but still, there's still always, I don't know where the tires come from, but they always appear.
So I've seen the record you have where you keep track of everyone that comes in.
Yes.
Write the tires. So if for some reason somebody was to come in, we're over the 185 ton, you've got their name, you've got what?
If we're past 185, to reach that.
Yeah, okay. 185, someone comes in and says, hey, I brought them here, I'd like to have the $85 a ton deal for David City. You would still write their name down. How many tons they have? Would we have a record if someone just said, hey, I'm not going to pay? Because what's going to happen is this is a great thing for the environment, but if somebody abuses this, then we'll have the name of who abused it and why we no longer do the grant. Because if this thing gets out of hand, it's over.
Sure.
I mean, that's where I'm coming from. And so we will have the names of the people that ruined it.
Right. I would say that's scenario. Why I guess it's good that this is here now, that if people think they have over, maybe they ought to go get their truck weighed. Ahead of time and be prepared with a check.
Because visiting with you and Paul, I have every confidence. You do a wonderful job out there.
Right.
I think it's very well managed program. It's great for the environment. It gets that stuff out of windbreaks and silage piles and rivers. Yeah, keeps the stuff out of there. But you know, there's a limit, and there's only so much. And
Paul, I did, after he left, I talked to him in the hallway, and he did say that I know he's checked with some of the large ones. There's some large people, groups that bring in a lot of tires every year, and we have contacted them and told them that they would only be allowed 4 ton, and after that, this is a great deal for them. Their gate fee at David City is 110, and they're offering this to the people that have the tire amnesties and have the grants with them, that they can do it for 85. And if they would rather drive to David City, they're welcome to do that too, and they get the $85 a ton rate.
One last thing, though. Who's responsible for billing? When we say we're going to bill, who's responsible for billing?
I
like the idea of a checkbook.
I don't. My personal opinion, I don't want a bill. I don't want to be responsible for that. I'm sure.
If you have me read it in, it's not going to have billed in.
Does it say that?
Yes, it does.
Oh, he says that there. I'm sorry.
I am going to read it in.
He just handed that to me.
We'll collect at the gate at the rate of 85 per ton.
Yeah, I don't believe do we have the authority to, could we bill people for that?
Well, if they're going to utilize the service you're offering.
I'm sorry, I didn't read that.
Okay, I didn't know if we could. I didn't know if we could.
Well, Myron, you had a question?
One thing I want to do, this is 4 ton per entity, not like the largest one on here. They brought 8 different loads. It's not every time you bring a load.
No.
And I'm sure you guys had watched that. But just so people don't think I can bring 3.5 ton this morning and I'll bring 3.5 ton this afternoon.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a lot of them, they really recommended we have 100 tires, 50 cents a tire, 25 cents a tire, and so this is what we settled on.
Your largest one on here, they brought 21 ton last year. So.
Yes.
And even I hate to say it, but our highway department brought a little over 6 ton. So.
6,000.
No, they brought 2 different times, 6,000 some. So they did. They brought over, it was 2 times. It was No, we were $16,960, okay. Our highway department brought. So, I mean, our highway department would bill them. You don't have to collect from them.
Okay. Yeah. Bill the county. Mark that down.
He caught up by now, shouldn't
we? Linda, my question is, I don't see anywhere on here that I know some years it's only been personal and no commercial.
No, the only one it can't by law, by the DEQ, is if you're a tire distributor or a tire retailer, you cannot bring it.
Okay.
Otherwise, it is open to any. It is open to businesses. It's open, I mean, not, but if you're selling in the business of selling tires, that excludes you.
Okay.
Okay, I will read in the tire amnesty recycling grant or poster here. Tire amnesty recycling, date and times. Wednesday, August 8th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday, August 9th, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. or until 185 tons have been collected. Tires from Gage County only. No tires will be accepted after 185 tons or 5 p.m. August 9th, whichever comes first. Please have separate count of the car pickup tires, large truck tires, combination combine tractor and large implement tires, or a tear weight on truckload of tires. Limit of 4 tons per individual or entity without charge. If you deliver more than 4 tons, it will be collected at the gate at $85 per ton. Gage County Fairgrounds parking lot. For more information, contact 228-4576 or 223-1384. The tonnage collected will be announced on Quibi Radio at 10:05 a.m., 12:05, 2:05, and 14:05 p.m. So listen or call before coming to see if you can still dispose of your tires. No rims allowed, no tire retailers. No dumping of tires prior to 8 a.m. August 8th or after 5 p.m. August 9th. Illegal dumping of tires will be prosecuted. Electronic surveillance of the tire collection site is in place. And that is the Tire Amnesty Recycling Program.
Okay.
Thank you.
Fine. Thank you very much.
Millard Gustafson, introduction of the new deputy.
Good morning. I want to introduce to you today our newest deputy, Jason Sharp. He's been working with us since earlier this month. He's currently in our field training officer program. He has been and still is employed with the Army National Guard. He's just going to go more of a part-time basis than full-time. He received numerous hours of training, both military police work and military intelligence through the military. He also has his Nebraska law enforcement certification. He has been a part-time deputy with me for about the last 2 or 3 years, so he's not a newcomer to us, but he's just going full-time. He had worked both with the Blair and Lexington Police Departments as well as the Las Vegas Metro Police, and he holds several certifications related to law enforcement and military as well. And he was in the Omaha area, I believe, before he came down here, and he's moved down now living in Gage County. So I thought it'd be an opportunity to get a chance to see him, so if you get stopped for anything, you'll just know who he was. So if you have any questions for him, you know, feel free. But we're hoping Jason, well, we know he's going to do a good job for us. He has been working part-time, so hope that continues on.
Thank you and welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Approve or disapprove office equipment request to be paid out of inheritance.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman, just Matt. Just talk about this briefly. I know there's some of the office holders and department heads have apparently moved on. This is part of the budget request at a finance committee. There's office equipment that needs to be purchased sooner than later, and there are a significant amount of requests here. So as we put the budget together, the idea was to use inheritance dollars for that. So you've seen a proposal here of what the cost would be, and of course it's up to the individual department holders and elected officers to make sure that they're following all the purchasing guidelines, bids, things like that. And like I said, you see most of them that are on here meet those guidelines. And so that's their responsibility. But the idea was these are what we sometimes can refer to in the private sector as capital purchase items. And they happen once every 5 or 6 or 8 years. And so this was just an idea to do this. If there's any questions, ask those department holders.
I would just like to comment that this was a one-time opportunity where we've seen that there were some needs in several of the offices throughout the county here, and we just thought this was a good opportunity to be able to put them all in a pile and hopefully get some better purchases for the county's dollars. So that was kind of the idea behind this, and I think it's a good idea, and I think we ought to move forward with it.
Is that going to come later, or what's...
Any more discussion?
This is what we're approving. We're approving the $85,000.
We're not approving a dollar amount.
A dollar amount.
That's an estimate. We're just saying, okay, this is the amount that we're going to, cost our, because those are bids and those are estimates, and some of them are, my understanding is some of them, as I look at the office holders, some of those bids are 30 and 60 days old.
Mine is 30. It will expire July 30th.
So, as we were putting the budget together, there were a lot of items that were coming up this year for purchase, and so we thought, well, like Gary said, let's bundle some of these and see if we can get a better deal. And, some of their specific needs for those offices. So, I can't speak directly to what those specific requirements are, but there were multiple requests. We decided to put them together.
I know, like the sheriff's office, their estimates that I was given when we got this together was in May, so there may be some fluctuation of price from what Julie said. So
the warranty for 3 days.
So they'll have to be double checked to see on prices.
Mine is dated June 20th.
Okay, any more discussion? Vote. 6-0 to approve. Approve or disapprove 1% increase for the lid on restricted funds.
We'll make the motion to approve the 1% increase.
Yes.
Thank you.
Moved by Bauman.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion.
Dawn, you, as our official budget preparer, can you give a brief explanation? Every year I ask you to do this.
Well, it's just if you to approve your 1% increase to allow for some growth basically in your budget. Kind of like we've had some experience with townships, if you don't continue to grow, you kind of get caught when the cost of living goes up and you don't increase your base.
And every tax levying entity in the state has the ability to do this, and I believe it was going back to 1998, I think it was LB 989 at the time, and that's what designates what everybody's lid and cap is, and then it gives you an opportunity. I think it's 2.5% you can do every year, and then you, as a body, as you can vote to do an additional percent on top of that. So you'll see townships do it. I think school districts do it, things like that. So you have an opportunity to increase your tax asking or your lid, changes your lid limit. And I think it used to be, I don't remember it's actually state statute now, but that's when it was, I think it was 98 or something when they went through and spelled all those out. So.
Any more discussion? Vote. 6-0 to approve. Let's do committee reports, then we'll do our closed session. Gus? Do I not get mine after I hand it in?
Not the way you treated me. Okay, Don Mark, where you got your form filled out?
Oh.
You listen like this in class when you're younger?
Yeah, you know I was. Building and grounds.
We didn't meet, so Denny was out. We visited with Davey a little bit about getting his budget requests in and making sure he's getting capital improvement items to Dawn, but really I don't have anything else other than what we talked about 2 weeks ago. So,
okay.
I think Davey's been working with Gus, too, is trying making sure that there's budget items in there for improvements that we need to do based on jail standards and fire marshal over at the jail, so that'll continue to come up, and Gus and Davey have talked about that.
Economic development.
We had a meeting last Thursday. We hoping to meet with a web developer, and the individual got delayed by plane flights or whatever, so we're lining up a date, I think, maybe next Monday, the 26th or something. They're checking to see which dates work for them. We did interview the very first candidate we interviewed, had into Beatrice and interviewed, they did not offer him the job. They felt he wasn't a good fit. We did interview one again this past Monday. He was here in Beatrice. Individual that worked over in Iowa Department of Economic Development for 17 to 20 years and then took a job for a couple, 3 years in South Carolina. Haven't had a chance to talk to everybody. The interview I thought went real well. Then yesterday afternoon, the committee, the three people on the committee did a phone. They were planning on, I haven't heard, but they were planning on doing a phone interview with another individual from Arizona. So we'll see how that's going. So that process is moving onward. I passed around to everybody an expense sheet from them this past, from our meeting last Thursday, and they had an expense of about $1,900 for the period so far. And then at the meeting they did decide to request the $20,000 from the county and the city that they each had coming yet in July here or whatever. And the main thing I visited with Don and Matt, too, a little bit about was that they know they're having expenses coming up. The web developer, for instance, is somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000 if they hire the one that they're looking at or whatever. That Pat Radigan's really done a lot of that groundwork on visiting with companies and people about which one's one of the better ones, and that's the one that we hope to interview. So, you know, there are ongoing costs, and that's why Engage did request the $20,000, and you saw it in the claims that the $20,000 from each city and county for those funds, so they know they're going to have ongoing costs. The second page there was they approved the budget, or this is the budget they approved for the year, I guess, for the coming year, and they know very well that a lot of these things, starting out new and not knowing what some of these costs are going to be, they put in, after all their discussion, what they felt was a good amount, but they also know that several of these will be changed or whatever. They won't use them or they'll go over or whatever and stuff. And the meeting before, we had probably half an hour discussion on, and this last meeting, again, we had another good half an hour discussion on whether to move something from one to another. This right now is the has been the approved budget. So,
anything else for economic development? Emergency management, EMS.
No meeting.
Gary, there was some documentation. Did Mark contact you?
No, I haven't talked to Mark.
Okay, there was some documentation about a. Or did we give him a? I think typically by informal board policy, what we do is if folks want to go to conferences, and this one's out of state, it's a I have Don make copies of this to everyone, but it's a Texas Engineering Extension Service enhanced incident management for emergency management. Mark's got a request to go to this. It's out of state. I believe it's a 3.5-day long FEMA. It's a FEMA sponsored course, and they cover all expenses, including travel, meals, and lodging. So, Mark's got a request to go to this, basically on FEMA's dime, and I guess every taxpayer's dime. But, I mean, it's FEMA. FEMA is reimbursing for that, or they cover it. So. All I know is what Mark sent me, but I didn't know if anyone else got this or if you guys want to look at that. Or I don't have a problem with him going.
When's it coming?
Stuff's paid for.
You didn't get it?
Oh. There may be an opening as soon as September, which would work for him. So he has to wait till there's openings.
Yeah. So it was a request he wanted to know, and I don't think we talked about it at our last emergency management meeting, but it looks like it was sent to him. Email, so
I got it. So yeah.
We didn't talk about it. I don't think.
No, it was after. I just got it. I think this time.
So, no, I saw that coming up. So.
Okay. I don't know what I just did about this. Huh. Okay. Anything else for emergency management? Equalization, self-explanatory today. Finance.
Worked on the budget, had a couple of really good finance meetings, putting the budget together. Part of that budget was what we did here today. Big one is Road and Bridge. You know, we spend a lot of money there. We're going to continue to meet with Mark Minnelli and Galen and get that budget put together. Try to provide for infrastructure needs. Got some capital improvements we need to do. I think we've got basically all the requests in. Made some small increases. Of course, we're not taking any new agencies, so you know, as the requests come in, thank you, but no thank you. So we're continuing to plug away, and hopefully we can spend, I'm hoping the month of August should have the budget pretty well done. And so we'll, my intent is just to have that on the agenda, talk to Don every meeting in August. It'll be on the agenda. Anyone wants to talk about it, they can. But Terry and Gary, we had some really good meetings, and so that's about all we have to say. So hopefully next meeting we can get kind of our initial proposal out and let everyone see what that looks like. If we get it done before then, Don will try to get that out to you. So check your boxes here if you want to sneak by and pick it up.
Okay. Any questions for finance? Human resource employee relations?
No report.
Insurance?
Sounds like we got some estimates coming or some numbers coming at us maybe about where we're going to be coming at this next year. So as soon as we get that in, then we'll be having a meeting and we'll have something to come forward with.
Okay. Law enforcement?
We had a meeting Monday again, and I don't know if everybody got the sheet. Gus, basically more for information for us than anything, that he was going to introduce a new deputy, that the electrical work has been completed on the Wymore impound facility, still waiting on the vent work and the concrete work. Unclaimed property held after 180 days will be sold via propertyroom.com agreement. It's a company like eBay, then they take a commission, the county gets the remainder. So the county attorney has reviewed and signed off on it. He's placed a hold on a couple used chargers with 20,000 and 30,000 miles on that as we go forward, we'll keep reviewing, and if things work out, we'll see what we can do to get those. The ongoing issues with the facility, the plumbing in the jail, the office, and I believe he said he even had some trouble with some air conditioning that they had to
replace the air conditioning in the compressor.
Most of all the ID badges, and a lot of us got them today. As soon as you have the paperwork in, he says new ID badges. Still working on the fobs and access to those just because of one time there was 65 of them out or something. It's a few too many out. Yeah. The third floor up here where they have the check-in station, they're looking at putting a few lock boxes up there so that when they get stuff from people, they can lock them in there and stuff. And starting, this is probably the big one, and Gus doesn't know what this is going to cost for the sheriff's department. Starting 1/1/13, all law enforcement personnel must have 20 hours of continuing education training annually. This not only includes full-time, but also part-time reserve deputies, and he doesn't know yet what effect that'll have on the budget.
Sensitivity training?
I can't be more sensitive than I am now, you know, what can I say?
Yeah, I got a comment for later. Okay, anything else for law enforcement? Road and Bridge, Terry.
Okay, we did have some officials from Lincoln Township visit us about bridge railings on one or two bridges in their township. Want to know if we could do anything to prove the railings are just sitting out there, kind of in the wide open, if we could put some kind of a skirt on it as far as an accident-wise, if it would help. And Galen's going to take a look at that, see what we can do with that. Also, at the same time, planning zoning from now on, if there's a big or small project that's going on, we're going to try to identify or try to tell the township officials what's going in and where, because a lot of times structures are built on roads that require a high maintenance to get them back into shape. So they just want to have a little heads up on that, so they're going to get a little premature notice on that. Linden Road is done. It's finished. Also, we did a little, or Matt did a looking back on the last road bond, how it went, and it was in 1998, and just looked at the areas that were picked up and how that was done, and just kind of looking at for future reference possibility how it was done in the past. We're going to just review the records on that, and that's basically it.
Okay. That is it. We have a closed session. It's pending litigation and necessary for the protection of the public interest. I need a motion to go into executive session.
So moved.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Vote. 6-0 to approve.
Fill your form out before you.
Moved by.
Wait. Okay.
I'll make a motion to come out of executive session.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Seconded by Juergens. Discussion. Vote. 5-0 with Bauman now absent. I'll start reading these in as no change until Patty gets here.
Are we going to adjourn first?
Oh, we need to. You're correct. We need to adjourn the Gage County Board of Equalization. Anything else for the good of the order? Gage County Board of Equalization is adjourned at 11:40. Resume, reconvene the Gage County Board of Equalization at 11:40 with attendance by observation.